This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, November 28th. I'm Tom Rogers. Coming up, a report on how table scraps become electric energy. We'll have a forecast as well from AM 580's Mike Sola. First, a look at today's news. Illinois Senate Minority Leader says he expects lawmakers to leave Springfield this week with a plan to phase in electric rate hikes. Republican Frank Watson says there have been negotiations recently between legislative leaders and Illinois' two leading utilities to slow down January's anticipated hikes of 22% to 50%. Watson says failing to take action will take its toll on residents as well as businesses across the state.
I think that's what has to happen, because it's outrageous what we're talking about as far as an increase. And once again, we talk about job climate, the cost of doing business for industries in Illinois that are power dependent, and there's an awful lot of them. This is going to be a huge problem for them. So I think ultimately in the end, and this is the week we've got to get it done, is there'll be some sort of a compromise.
Watson says he doesn't support a legislative proposal to extend the rate freeze. He says giving Ameren and ComEd the opportunity to have implemented some modest increases the past 9 years would have avoided the massive hikes that Illinoisans may see now. Lawmakers resume their fall veto session today. It adjourns on Thursday. Watson spoke yesterday at the U of I's Institute of Government and Public Affairs. While the Illinois Senate gave its okay to raising the minimum wage in the state by $1 an hour, it's still unclear if the other chamber of the General Assembly will do the same. As Amanda Vinicky reports, a House panel yesterday discussed the issue but didn't take a vote on it.
The proposal would require businesses to pay workers at least $7.50 an hour. That's a dollar more than today's minimum. Additionally, it would index the minimum wage to inflation. While the measure would likely pass the Democratic-controlled House, the question is if representatives will get the chance to vote on it. That's in the hands of Speaker Michael Madigan, who's so far been noncommittal. Given that the legislation doesn't require the wage go up until July, Madigan spokesman Steve Brown asks, why the hurry?
We're 8 months away from anyone receiving an extra dime out of this proposal, so that's an important aspect, I think, to keep in mind.
Brown says Speaker Madigan is aware that Governor Rod Blagojevich has said he wants the proposal passed during the legislature's fall veto session, which is set to end Thursday. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
While Champaign County Board Democrats remain at odds over their nominee for chairman of the board, Republicans have chosen John Jay as their candidate. The board will vote on the next leader in a week. Democrats yesterday failed to reach a consensus between current chair Barbara Wysocki and county party chair Tony Fabry after a two-hour caucus Sunday night. They'll meet again just before the county board's organizational meeting next Monday. Democrats hold a 15-12 majority on the board. Two psychologists are expected to take the stand today in the murder trial of a woman charged with first-degree murder and the drownings of her three children. The psychologists will testify for the defense in Amanda Hamm's trial. Defense attorneys will begin building their case today now that the prosecution is rested. Hamm's three children died after the car they were in sank in Clinton Lake in 2003. Her former boyfriend, Maurice Legrone Jr., had been driving, and officials say the two killed the children because they were in the way of their relationship. Both Hamm and Legrone have said the deaths were a tragic accident. Legrone was convicted of first-degree murder in April and is serving a life sentence. Hamm's defense attorneys are expected to call him to testify next week. The debate over Urbana's rental registration program is going into another round. Last night, the City Council preliminarily approved a program that would undertake increased property inspections to improve safety in rental housing. Next week, the council could approve it finally, but Mayor Laurel Pressing has called for another public hearing that may postpone the decision. Pressing says Alderman made a big change in the proposed ordinance by exempting owner-occupied homes that rent out a room.
The argument was that why should you have to inspect the whole house if you're only renting a room? Well, I mean, the obvious answer to that is fire safety, all kinds of things depend on the whole structure, not just on the one room. It would be nonsense to come and just inspect the one room.
Councilmember Danielle Chenoweth voted for the change. She says inspecting the whole house could be too big of a burden for landlords with one room.
There are lots and lots of requirements and details of the ordinance that I don't feel are appropriate for folks who are owner-occupied who are renting a single room. And I'm concerned that the affordable housing stock of people renting rooms is going to disappear.
Chenoweth says up to $50 in annual fees would also discourage small-time landlords from renting out. The Philip Morris Tobacco Company scored a big win yesterday in the U.S. Supreme Court. The High Court refused to hear an Illinois class action lawsuit filed against the company by smokers of so-called light cigarettes. From Washington, Sam Hudzik has more.
The lawsuit's plaintiffs say they were misled into believing cigarettes labeled as light were healthier than others. In 2003, a judge in Illinois agreed, awarding $10 billion to the smokers, but his ruling was overturned by the state Supreme Court. Since the federal government allowed cigarettes to be called light, the state court said, then Philip Morris couldn't be penalized for it. The U.S. Supreme Court's announcement means the state Supreme Court ruling stands, and Philip Morris doesn't have to pay. The lawsuit was originally filed in Madison County, Illinois, a court system demonized by tort reform advocates for returning lawsuit judgments they call outrageous. I'm Sam Hudzik.
For the latest newscast online, go to will.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Tom Rogers. With ongoing concerns about over-reliance on fossil fuels, researchers and entrepreneurs are looking for alternate ways to generate energy. One university scientist has created a power plant fueled by organic waste, including table scraps from restaurants. Tamara Keith of the Environment Report has more.
At Boulevard, an upscale restaurant, diners lunch on seared sea scallops, paella, and grilled escalar, among other options. Back in the kitchen, cooks are careful to keep all food scraps out of the trash. The food scraps from this restaurant and 2,000 others in the San Francisco Bay Area are already being collected to turn into compost. But now some of that food, about 8 tons a week, is going to a new biogas power plant at the University of California, Davis. Tim Quaintance is a chef at Boulevard. He says he's pleased that his leftovers aren't just going to a landfill.
It's nice that things that in the past have just been basically thrown away are now actually being used and, with this technology, really contributing to reducing our reliance on fossil fuels.
In Davis, the table scraps are being converted to fuel at an experimental power plant known as the Biogas Energy Project. With its 4 large steel tanks and 22-kilowatt generator, this plant is the first real-world demonstration of a technique called anaerobic phased solids digestion. Rehong Jha is a professor of biological and agricultural engineering at the University of California, Davis. She first developed this technology on a smaller scale in her lab.
What you see here is 20,000 times larger than the reactor system I use for laboratory testing.
It may sound like something out of a science fiction movie, leftovers into power, but Dave Kinwinski says it's real. He's CEO of OnSite Power Systems Incorporated, which licensed the technology and operates the plant.
Every ton of collected food waste will provide enough either electrical or thermal energy to run an average of 10 California homes.
Kinwinski sees this test plant as the first step to commercializing biogas power plants. Here's how it works. The food waste, as well as grass clippings and other would-be trash, go into a sealed tank where bacteria break the mush down into water and organic acids, kind of like what happens if you leave lettuce in the fridge too long. When that's done, the organic acids are pumped into another tank where different bacteria convert the soup into methane gas.
Biogas can be used to run a generator to make electricity. We have a generator here we'll be running, or we can use it in the boiler to offset natural gas heat. And we're looking at taking the gas and converting it to vehicle fuels.
The trash and recycling company that serves San Francisco, NorCal Waste Systems, is providing the raw materials. Robert Reed is the company's director of corporate communications.
This research and other research like this is very important because it could be a double or a triple. And what I mean by that is it could produce new energy. It could reduce the amount of material going to landfill. And it could help reduce the creation of greenhouse gases.
And Reed says if this technology proves to be commercially viable, the results could be huge. In just California alone, 38 million tons of garbage is sent to landfills each year. He says half of that could be converted to power, and that's enough energy to continuously power the entire city of San Francisco.
Suddenly, leaving a little broccoli on your plate doesn't seem like such a bad thing. For the Environment Report, I'm Tamara Keith.
The Environment Report is a production of Michigan Radio. Support comes from the Joyce Foundation, the George Gund Foundation, and USDA's Cooperative Extension Service. You can learn more about Environment Report stories and subscribe to weekly podcasts at environmentreport.org.
The rain is spreading across Illinois and Indiana in front of a change in our weather for the colder coming up. Mike Sola has our forecast today. Mostly cloudy, scattered showers, most numerous in northern and western Illinois, and highs today ranging from 60 in the north to 68 in southern Indiana. Tonight in Illinois and in western Indiana, mostly cloudy with scattered showers. In the remainder of Indiana, cloudy with showers arriving toward sunrise, and lows ranging from 50 in the north to near 60 in far southern Illinois. For tomorrow, cloudy with scattered showers and a few thunderstorms, most numerous in northern and west central Illinois. The highs tomorrow ranging from 58 in northwest Illinois to 72 in the south. Then on Thursday, a chance of snow showers in west central Illinois, elsewhere scattered showers and a few thunderstorms. By Friday, partly sunny in the northwest, but mostly cloudy elsewhere with scattered snow showers and maybe heavier snow in southeast Indiana. And Friday's highs mostly in the 30s, with the exception of some 40s in southeast Indiana. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, November 28th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, The Afternoon Magazine, agricultural programming, and other helpful information on our website, will.uiuc.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.